Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Lucas Moreno. Welcome back, Lucas.
Hey, thanks, James. Good to be back.
So, Lucas, when you're on in the past, we talked about level of repair analysis and that work that, you know, goes in up front to making sure that we can support our assets long term. And we're back to talk about that again. But not level of repair analysis, but more of how do we support our assets or supportability. But before we dive into all of that, you know, you're a principal and owner at Moreno Consulting. You're also senior reliability and logistics engineering program manager. Now, you're writing a book, I know that. You're also a doctor. You spent a long time in the Coast Guard. What else did I miss that you want to fill in the blanks or introduce yourself with?
I guess there's an odd bit of filler there already, but I love to teach. I love project management. I love process efficiencies and improvements. So, and of course, I just love hanging out with good people. So, yeah, that's about it. You know, BMT is my full time job, where I'm a senior reliability and logistics type, and we do a lot of maritime focused work. You know, new ship construction and supportability design. And that's kind of my role there.
All right. Excellent. Now, how long have you been involved in logistics engineering, supportability, reliability?
Well, in varying ways, going on 22 years now. So I did the vast majority of that time, obviously, in the military, in the Coast Guard. And then I did a good bit of work on the side while I was in the military. In reliability and maintenance. And then once I retired, I jumped into it full swing. So yeah, about 22 years now.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. So you bring a tremendous amount of experience from the military, from supporting these assets all over the globe. And what we really want to talk today about is supportability itself. So in your own words, what is supportability?
Well, I guess to use, you know, the word in its own definition, which is usually a no-no, you know, but it really is kind of kind of a no-brainer in this case. You know, you have to invest in an asset several ways. I think, most organizations really look at the upfront investment pretty rigorously. They do a lot of analysis to do cost benefit and determine whether this is a worthy investment of our immediate funds to make this purchase happen, or to put this piece of equipment online, or whatever the case may be. And the reality is the long tail of work and budgeting that will surround that asset is not found in the beginning phase of acquisition. It's more so related to the sustainment of that asset and its performance throughout its life cycle. So, you know, to me, supportability is all about setting up a planned means of supporting that asset throughout its life cycle.
All right. So that planned means of supporting that asset, that involves what? Just the maintenance of it, the overhauls of it, operations of it. What does that include?
Yeah. So the tentacles spread quickly, right? You have everything from supply chain considerations, equipment obsolescence. You have training for personnel that are both operating and maintaining the asset. You have skill development and then skill retiring related to some of that training. You've got configuration management of the asset throughout its life cycle and the cost and effort that it takes to maintain that level of attention to the configuration of the asset. And of course, you have, you know, all of the staffing concerns that come around the object, its environmental planning. How is this thing going to be impacted by and impact the environment? There's so many different areas of supportability that you could look at. But the most common are, you know, do we have the right people and resources to maximize the operational availability of an asset. So, you know, in the way I've always looked at supportability is that, you know, much like we look at reliability, where, you know, we want something to perform the way it should when we need it to, you know, with supportability, it's more about like, what's it going to take to get to that point, right? What kind of infrastructure do we have to build around it? What kind of program do we have to build around this equipment? Now, the military does this in a very robust way because it has very large, complex systems to maintain. And that's what's kind of driven the military to have this very structured approach to supportability analysis. But, you know, as those tentacles spread, as you know, to use the same analogy, you know, in each one of those sections, it also does so. You know, when you start talking about setting up personnel to operate and maintain a piece of equipment, there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, everyone that's listened to this podcast that's ever worked in reliability and maintenance understands that, you know, getting the right skilled talent on site to operate the equipment is one thing. To get it on site to maintain it is another. Having the right level of people managing the life cycle of the asset is a whole nother level of skill and talent. So you got to kind of bundle all this stuff up and look at it as a whole to really understand like what the impacts of supportability are on reliability and asset management.
All right. So supportability is virtually everything we need to operate and maintain that asset. And like you said, all those subsections, you know, those are a discipline unto itself. Why would organizations want to invest all this time and effort and consider supportability? Can't they just buy a piece of equipment, throw it in and run it?
Well, in some cases, the answer is yes. And in many cases, the answer is no, right? So let's look at, you know, just like in almost every other instance where you have to weigh whether a detailed analysis is justified or not, you have to look at the complexity and intricacy and interaction and all these other things that come with this systems approach to a piece of equipment, right? So if I'm just going to go buy something COTS, commercial off the shelf, you know, like a, let's take a home generator, for example. If I'm going to go buy like a small generator for my house, I probably don't have to go through this very rigorous analysis to justify the purchase, to justify the maintenance, which is fairly, you know, established by the manufacturer. I'm not going to have to bring in a ton of skilled talent to operate the piece of equipment, but as the complexity and scope of equipment increases and the difficulty of performing tasks and supporting that asset increase, so does the need to do analysis or to look at this through a supportability lens. You know, the generator on a large ship or a generator in a large plant is a completely different monster, right? Different creature than the small Honda generator you might roll into your, you know, onto your property to help your house out. So, you know, if you look at a large engine, it may have depot maintenance concerns, you know, for, you know, maybe halfway through its life cycle, it needs an overhaul if you really want to get the full length of that block out of it. You know, a good example of propulsion engines for ships, you know, maybe every 4,000 hours, you have to do a center section overhaul or a top end on that piece of equipment. And you're going to need very specialized labor, a lot of parts, a lot of money, a lot of time and planning, and it's going to have an immediate and resounding impact on the availability of the asset while it's happening. So all of those impacts to the maintenance, all those impacts to the operation, all those impacts by that supportability, those supportability elements on the availability of the asset drive up its eligibility for analysis.
All right, so we're going to be very particular when we do this. Those complex systems, those systems we don't know a lot about, those are the ones we're going to invest the time and effort to do this type of work.
Yeah, and it better be high value too, you know, just because it doesn't make much sense to do it even on something that's complex or you know, kind of difficult to manage. It may not be worth it if the item is cheap, because, you know, if you take the LoRa model, if you take the level of repair analysis and you stick it into this equation, it may just be a replace item just because it's cheaper to replace it than it is to maintain it or to spend a lot on supportability. So yeah, you would make that determination through the analyses.
All right, excellent. Now, how do organizations go about conducting one of these analyses once they've determined it's worth doing? Is there a standard out there? Is there a book on it? How do they know what to do?
Yeah, I mean, so a great place to learn about this. I hate to point everyone to a textbook, but really it kind of is a great place to start. Benjamin Blanchard produced a textbook titled Logistics Engineering and Management. I think the last edition was the sixth edition. And in there, in chapter five, he has a great chapter on logistics and supportability analysis. So in that chapter, he lays out a pretty easy to understand case for performing LSA. The difference here is, you know, it's one thing to read about it and learn about it. It's a whole nother thing to do it and have validated results from previous efforts, and then take those lessons learned and roll them into performing future analyses. And that's where, you know, a company like BMT or another provider that would perform supportability analysis can become valuable to you, because they can do the work in much reduced time and to a higher level of efficiency and effectiveness than maybe someone doing it the first time. But yeah, Benjamin Blanchard's textbook's a great place to start. And then there are some military handbooks out there as well that also address LSA.
All right, excellent. I will make sure to link those in the show notes so people that want to learn more, they can click to the military handbooks or the textbook that you mentioned. Now, once we understand what we need to do, how this is supposed to work, who's actually doing this work? Is it the maintenance manager? Is it a specialized group of people? Is it a cross-functional group of people? Who's actually involved in doing this?
Yeah, I prefer to have a cross-functional group because there's so many different areas of expertise involved in a legit supportability analysis, a large one on, and again, we're thinking large equipment, large value, large logistics and maintenance footprint, high dollar investment to the organization type stuff. So it justifies the group of multidisciplinary kind of engineers. I like to have the experience of the performers, the maintainers and the trainers are critical to the analysis, because you're going to take into account all of these different things that people are already familiar with out there in FAMICA, maintainability, training analysis. Some of these things that are a little bit more common out in the non-military sector are all elements of a supportability analysis. FAMICA is a huge part of it. So those that are experienced with FAMICA, you understand how important it is that you have someone on site that knows that piece of equipment or similar pieces of equipment and can weigh in with expert judgment on what potential failure modes and effects and criticality are, right? So you want to kind of take that same model and put it across each of the different types of analyses. And some of those include life cycle cost analysis. So you're going to need people that are good with budget, understand life cycle cost impacts. You're going to need people that understand level of repair analysis. You're going to need supply chain folks, because you're going to need transportation and distribution analyses, spares and repair parts and inventory. And so all of these different elements should have some representation at the table.
All right. So we have level of repair analysis, FMEAs, procurement, all these people that all this expertise involved in doing the supportability plan. We understand how this thing will fail, how it operates. From there, we got to figure out how do we make sure we have people, resources, tools, parts, all those things to do that type of work. What is it going to cost to do that short, long-term, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road? Those are all the things we're looking at, right?
Yes, absolutely. And then there's other things also, that you got to kind of wrap around this depending on the piece of equipment. You may have some pretty involved test and support equipment analyses or operator task analysis, depending on how complex the operation of the asset is. There may even be like a facility and utility analysis engaged to determine whether the facility and the utilities that you've planned for the asset are sufficient, or if you don't have them, what are the requirements for the facilities or utilities around that asset going to be? And in the text I'm writing about, which started as a Laura book and has now grown into a sustainability or a sustainment engineering type book. I talk a little bit about that. I use the example of placing a large diesel generator in a facility, and how the facility itself is such a big part of that decision and the impacts on that life cycle. So yeah, you're going to take all of those parts and you're going to wrap it around it. Now, you're also going to, once you've done all those analyses, you're going to have to roll some of that information back into the other analyses, right? I mean, we know that doing a FAMICA is a prerequisite to doing a maintenance task analysis, right? I mean, how are you supposed to know which maintenance to analyze if you don't have a good FAMICA? So there is some pathing that has to be done here and some planning and sequencing, but yeah, it's all kind of connected.
All right, excellent. So there is a tremendous amount of stuff that goes into this. Everything's interconnected. You know, there's a sequence for doing this, and I'm sure the textbook and the mill handbooks kind of help spell some of that out. Am I correct mm-hmm. in that assumption?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Because I know sometimes they don't always do that in a nice, easy to follow way.
Yeah, yeah. Or they don't give you enough detail, right? They tell you, hey, go do this. But then you're like, well, where's the how?
Exactly.
And, you know, that's going to happen in some cases with supportability analysis, because things that you're more familiar with, like, you know, we'll just take FAMICA, for example, or even a FAMIA, or, you know, you might have good life cycle cost analysts on staff at your organization. You know, they still may not be really good at performing, you know, different types of analysis, you know, like a LoRA, which we've talked about before, or training and operator analysis, those types of things. So, yeah.
All right. Excellent. Now, one of the terms, or it's one of these, you know, acronyms that is all too prevalent in not everything we do, but an ILS plan. What does ILS stand for, and what is an ILS plan?
All right. So this is where the community semantics kind of get involved a little bit, right? Like, so, you know, integrated logistics support is supposed to be everything supportability, right? ILS is a big, big world that encompasses all of these different elements. So really, supportability is just a slice of the ILS pie, you know, the integrated logistics support pie. The supportability analysis or supportability of an asset is just a portion of that, right? ILS will also have elements that aren't centered on supportability that reach up and over and around supportability as well. And obviously are inputs and outputs of all those analysis we mentioned earlier that are a part of supportability analysis. So ILS, just kind of think about ILS as being this overarching blanket of support.
Okay. So ILS is the major umbrella. Supportability is just a piece of that. Now mm-hmm. there's another term that's out there, LSA.
Okay. So that'd be a logistics support analysis. Okay. And so that's the actual, that's what chapter 5 of the textbook I was describing to you covers, is logistics and supportability analysis. And so that's the actual group of analyses that you would perform to do your ILS planning.
Okay. Excellent. So lots of different acronyms, lots of different analyses that come together to make sure we can support these assets, that it's worthwhile to purchase these assets, because I'm sure there's times where the supportability of them demonstrates that maybe this isn't the best solution for us. Maybe we need a different design or different asset. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you may find, it's like a hard lesson to learn at that point, because you've invested so much time in analysis that oftentimes organizations will just continue down the same path. And just to make sure I understand the question, you know, before I get the full answer. So we're looking at a situation where we have chosen a piece of equipment or an asset. We have started LSA. We're performing logistics support analysis, and we're finding that, you know, maybe this is or isn't what we thought it was, correct?
Correct. It's going to cost right. so much to support this thing over its life cycle. Maybe this isn't what we need. Maybe we need something else or need to look at a different option or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, the shame, the hard part about this is you try to do an analysis of alternatives during the acquisition of an asset so that you don't get yourself in this situation. So one of the key ways to avoid, or I want to say avoid, but reduce the risk of this happening is to perform a good analysis of alternatives before you invest a significant chunk of money and time into an acquisition strategy, right? And then once you've done that and you couple that with the BCA results, and you say, okay, this is our chosen path, you should have a pretty good high-level view of what the supportability requirements for the asset are. Then you can start LSA. That would be the ideal situation, right? But we all know that that's not always what happens. Sometimes we just get our hearts fixed on something, we start running down the path and information is disclosed to us that we didn't know before that may change our perspective on that asset. Well, depending on where you are in that asset's life cycle, depends on what you can do about it, right? So if we're still early in the process, we're going to have to design. I'll take a ship, for example. A ship is a very big, intricate, integrated, you know, for lack of a better term, system of systems, right? You got all these different pieces in there. I'm not going to scrap the ship because I don't like the generator we selected, right? But if we have to change tracks on the generator we selected because our maintenance reliability analysis is pointing us in a different direction, and we put that much weight in that analysis during the design phase, then it becomes a strategic decision to have a line in the sand about where you're going to change your design or not, right? You know, we're either stuck with it or we're not at this point based on other factors in the design. But once you get into production, obviously that conversation changes drastically. Okay. And the way the military kind of runs this type of thought process, if we're going to build a thing instead of just buying it, ready-made off the shelf, if we're going to build a ship, a class of ships, we're going to be really focused on configuration management. We may decide to go a different direction with a major piece of equipment, and it might cost us a chunk, but we're looking at the overall cost over life cycle of the asset, the vessel, not the generator, in regards to whether that trade-off is justified or not. So if this asset that you're determining decisions for is part of a bigger, grander thing, and that justification exists there, then it's a little bit of an easier pill to swallow. If it's more localized, where that asset is that asset, and everything is wrapped into that asset, and there's no way you're going to get around eating 100% of that decision and impact in this one point, it becomes a little bit more difficult. But you have to look at the long term. Remember, all of this is based around life cycle costing. None of it is, hopefully, a short-term decision. It should always be based around the long-term aspects of it. So, the good news is there's no rule that says you can't turn around. And that's something that I really learned in ship driving, not necessarily ship maintenance, but in ship driving, that the risk of making a bad decision is so severe that turning around or backing out of the situation is always an option, but it's one that you make with the captain, right? And I would say if you took that analogy and you put it toward this question, I would say it's always an option to turn around, but there's going to be a cost, and you shouldn't be making that decision on your own. You should be working with your leadership to do it.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com. Now, what advantage does doing all this analysis, making all these decisions up front, give organizations? What's the advantage of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So think about this as like a high level planning, right? I mean, all of this is trying to set yourself up for success in the future. We're trying to make sure that we have the right budget to operate and maintain an asset throughout its life cycle so that it impacts the cost, right? So we can now have a more accurate cost model for the sustainment of this asset throughout its life cycle. We also are considering how much it's going to cost to operate and meet the reliability or availability targets that we set for this asset, right? So all of these things come together to say we can plan the operation, maintenance, and availability of this asset in a better way the more we know about it. And we can be more intentional about the decisions we make throughout the life cycle of the asset. That to me is a huge part of this that kind of, falls off some people's radars. Being intentional about a decision has a tremendous amount of value on its own. It's one thing to find yourself in good or bad situations. It's a whole other thing to have not seen that coming when you could have, and you just didn't do the right work leading up to it to account for it, to address the risk of it, and do all these things that we do on a daily basis in response, in that reactionary culture to things, right? So the more you invest in analyses up front, the more you kind of buy down, hopefully, your risk in the future, improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the lifecycle support of the asset and reduce your overall lifecycle cost and be in a better position to respond to maintenance needs, whether they be preventive, predictive, or corrective, or whatever, moving into the asset's lifecycle. And that could change over time as the asset ages. So, you know, this just arms us with more information about the asset with which to make decisions.
All right. So we can make those informed decisions. We can drive down lifecycle costs through, you know, various contracts that are put in place by buying the right equipment or test equipment up front, determining where we're invest training, where we're not going to, all those different things. Sounds like a lot of work. I'll be honest.
It is.
So are there any tools that may assist with this? Is there a software package? Is it a series of spreadsheets that people build? What tools are out there to help with all this work and pulling all this together?
Yeah, that's a great question. Depending on where you work and what your project is and what the equipment is and what the culture is and what kind of community you work in and whether you're, you know, you like to depend on software or not, whether you're working with the Department of Defense or Department of Homeland Security or not, you know, kind of turns this conversation in different directions, right? So if you're working for a government contractor, you're going to be forced into using certain software that the government requires you to use. You know, PowerLogJ is a power logistics. J2 is a software package that you may have recalled from our conversation on LoRa that the Department of Defense uses to organize data for integrated logistics support. Okay. And then they take that information out of that database and feed it into a myriad of other databases within the department that they use for the day-to-day operations and sustainment of an asset, right? In the civilian sector, it's a little different. You get some more focused software. It's less grand on just database storage. Some of it's a little bit more focused on you know, execution of certain analyses. I happen to work with Optium a bit. My team does. They work with it far more than I do. But Optium is one of the software tools that we use to take everything from spreadsheets and PowerLogJ and all these other inputs, roll them into this one database, and then output them into PowerLogJ in a way that's a little bit more manageable than PowerLogJ is. And you could walk amongst the different logistics software tools out there. SlickWave's another one, and pick the one that works best for your organization. The big thing to remember here, though, is you know, you gotta they're not usually cheap, right? Like most big software packages, they're not usually cheap. Now, I've seen people do a tremendous amount of powerful logistics supportability analysis using basic tools like Excel, even the R program, you know.
Yep.
I've seen people use, you know, I was actually talking about R this morning on LinkedIn with someone. You know, it's a very, very powerful tool. And I used it in some of my research. But, you know, there are a lot of different avenues out there for you, depending on what your budget are. And the big thing to take away from all this is none of those things will always do the whole thing for you, you know, kind of like a CMMS. And, you know, like, can't just buy CMS, all of a sudden everything's great. And you have to know what the heck you're looking at, right? So no matter what tool you choose, am I putting the right things in? Am I getting the right things out? Can I validate that these results are realistic, you know, truthing it? And that's why I like to surround my team with talent from the field, people that have actually worked on these things that can, I can take this analysis and say, hey, how does this look? I mean, I know what the software said, but what does it mean, right? And does this look realistic to us? And is this just because the software says this is the way we should go? Is that really where we should go? I mean, it's just it's a prediction. It's a recommendation in some cases. I mean, what are we really going to do here? You know, the most important tool to put on this thing are the right brains, right? The right people on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had conversations with Fred Schenkelberg and others that said, if you don't understand the math behind Weibull and reliability growth analysis, and you throw a bunch of stuff into a software package, it's going to give you the mathematically correct answer.
Yes.
But does that make sense in terms of the operating context, the asset you're looking at, the failure modes you're experiencing, all those different things? You still have to have that fundamental understanding.
That's right. Absolutely. That is absolutely true. And if you don't have a good understanding about how all these different types of analyses influence each other or impact each other or lend credibility or value to each other, it becomes even more difficult. So you really have to understand logistics and supportability analysis and then make sure that your software is doing what you want it to do. Now, I will say one more thing on the end of this. Don't make this too crazy, right? Because I think one of the things that has plagued the LoRA, the level of repair analysis, and it's just a micro example of the same problem with all LSA. It looks big, it looks complex, it looks difficult. We're just not going to do it, right? And I think that that's sometimes the wrong answer.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Sometimes you have to dig in and do that work.
Yeah, nothing says you can't tailor it either. I mean, there's no book that says you can't tailor this to your organization. I mean, look at Famica. There's some people that will like, all right, anyone who's ever done multiple Famicas knows you could take three different teams, hand them the same piece of equipment, say, give me a Famica on that. You're not going to get the same three products out of it.
No, you never right? will.
Nope, you never will. There's no different.
It's part art, part science.
And that's right.
So, and now the level of repair analysis is no different, and the supportability is no different either.
Correct.
There's a lot of experience, a lot of art that goes behind a basic framework, and you yes. can tailor that to match your organization's needs.
Yes. And when you do the LSA, you're choosing to have those conversations and crunch those numbers and do that work in a structured, time-based, you know, organized way, rather than just being forced into it by the piece of equipment later. All right. Because we often find we're going to end up doing a lot of this work in a different fashion, but, you know, ultimately the same type of work later on when the equipment starts to drive the bus, you know, and starts to drag you down the road in this reactionary culture of like, hey, I'm having problems. I mean, that equipment doesn't care whether you did the LSA or not.
Nope.
Right.
And oftentimes it's going to cost you more when you're doing it reactively. Because you're getting the best prices, you're not getting the best lead times, you're not getting any of that stuff.
Absolutely. And now you're hitting pause in an availability period or a period of reduced availability and doing a lot of work that you could have done ahead of time and reduced your downtime, right? You could have reduced the downtime. You could have already had a lot of this figured out, but now you're doing it in the moment.
So with that, what do you think makes the biggest difference in organizations being successful with LSA or supportability? Is it doing it proactively? Is it tailoring it to their organizational context? Is it having the right people? What's that one thing?
I would say the people are probably the most important part, to be honest with you, because I think if you have the right people, they can make you know, good decisions for your organization, and they'll know where to tailor and where the value is in certain analyses. You know, they'll make good decisions for you. And they'll know what to trust and what not to trust, and they'll know what to feed and what not to feed, and they'll make all of this happen. I think, you know, and it sounds kind of cheesy to say, you know, the people matter most, but, you know, honestly, they do. They do matter the most in LSA because they're the most important part of supportability, and their awareness of the impacts of all the elements and variables that are in these analyses are super important. Whether you use them for analysis or you just use them for supporting the asset across its life cycle, you know, or both, you're going to need that. And those people are the only thing that can give that to you. So to me, it's always the people.
All right. Excellent. And if you had a magic wand that could change how you, your past experiences with these types of analyses, what would be the one thing you would change and how these are typically done within organizations?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say you don't want to get caught up in paralysis by analysis, right? I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer for people that do analysis. You know, don't let the tail wag the dog, right?
Yep.
At the same time, you need the right level of senior engagement when you're doing these. I made a post earlier in the week about, you know, one of the worst things you can do is have meaningless work, you know, in your life and in your organization. It's a complete waste of someone's time. You don't want these LSAs to be meaningless work. You want them to be meaningful. So for everything you do in the LSA, don't just do it because it's a check in the box. Do it because it's adding some value to the life cycle of the sustainment of the asset, period, over and out. If it doesn't add value, don't do it. And I think you have to make a concerted effort to be aware at all times that you are planning and extracting value from the analyses. And if you can remember to do that, your analysis will benefit your organization.
All right, excellent. So we've talked a lot about supportability, LSAs, all these things. What is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
Just try it. I mean, honestly, I think you learn so much about your equipment, whether you do this to make decisions or not, whether you have this really deep analysis or not, whether you do it all in one chunk or you break it up into individual analysis. And there's some purists out there that are going to cringe when I say that. You know, I get it. I really don't care. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, being a purist for the sake of being a purist doesn't add that value that I was talking about earlier, right? Like, just swing the bat and be aware of the fact that when you take it's almost like adopting a new perspective, right? If you just try it and you look at your equipment through this supportability lens, even if you don't do all of those analyses, even if you just do a ROM, you know, and you do a good overview, you know, good analytic approach to looking at the overall health of this asset and what it's going to take, that's worth more than doing nothing. And I think that everyone should at least try to do some depth of diving on the supportability of an asset before they invest a lot of money in purchasing it.
Yep, absolutely. You're going to have the purists with RCM that are going to say the same thing. But getting out and doing something is better than doing nothing. Start small, start within your stuff you can influence, and grow it from there once you've proved some success, once you've learned more. So often I see people and organizations not do anything because they're worried they're not going to do it perfectly.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to stub my toe. Okay. You know,
yeah.
Go stub your toe. I mean, I know it sucks, but it's not going to kill you. You know, I mean, and it's okay to not be right all the time. It's okay to spend some time doing this analysis and prove yourself wrong. That's okay. All of that is okay. So you just have to be willing to, you know, be creative and have fun with it, but also be aware of the fact that every minute you spend on it is a minute you spent on it, and that the stuff can get big fast and you have to control it and you have to, you know, use it. And again, focus on value. And as long as you do that, you can do it. I don't care if you take a long-term approach or if you do a quick approach, and I'll take two, you know, project management analogies. I don't care if you do like the linear or more linear predictive type approach to this analysis, or if you do like a sprint, you know, or you knock out 2 weeks of analysis and then you hit pause and you look at what you got, you know, and then you adjust, whatever, do whatever works best for you, but just do something, right? And then make it valuable to your organization.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. Well, Lucas, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about supportability and all these great things that go into being proactive and how we support and maintain our assets over their life cycle. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? Are you going to be at any more conferences coming up? When is your book coming out? All those great things.
Yeah, so I'm going to SMRP's annual shindig. It's going to be a good time. This will actually be my first annual conference, which is pretty cool. Probably going to go to MarCon this year again. I really had a good time last year. I'm just not sure what my schedule looks like at that time of year yet. I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can always find me on LinkedIn. And I love to just talk about all things, you know, logistics, supportability, sustainment, project management, reliability, maintenance, all of it. All of it's a blast. I love talking about all of it. So if you want to, reach out, reach out. And you can also find me at BMT, the organization I work for. My email, I can give you my email when we break off here so you can post it if you'd like.
All right. Excellent. Well, I will see you at the SMRP annual conference. And if you make it to MarCon, I will see you there as well. I'm scheduled to present at both right now. So,
good. What are you presenting on at MarCon?
MarCon, it's checklist manifesto for maintenance. How do we leverage checklists to reduce human error?
I love it. I love it. Now, hey, look at this. You can build that checklist off of some of these analyses, right?
Yes, you can.
That's great. Yes. In particular, the maintenance task analysis. It's great. It's good stuff.
Absolutely.
Fun.
All right. Well, Lucas, thank you again. It was a pleasure talking to you about supportability.
Hey, thanks again, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.